Ever feel like you're doing this teaching thing alone? You don't have to be. Share teaching is all about sharing the workload through the power of collaboration and teamwork. Together, we'll walk through all the difficult parts of teaching and learn how to streamline our processes, fine-tune our time management, and develop a more manageable workload. If that sounds like a dream come true to you, then welcome to the Shared Teaching Podcast. Let's share in the teaching to make those dreams a reality. Now here's today's Shared Teaching. Hello, 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 and welcome back to the Shared Teaching Podcast. My name is Susan, and I'm the creator here of Shared Teaching. And today I wanted to talk with you about episode 116, which is all about test-taking strategies for your younger elementary students. So if you teach first, second, or third, this episode is especially for you, and hopefully you'll get some great ideas from it. Now, test-taking doesn't, shouldn't happen just when it's state testing time. Let's say springtime, March, April, I'm not sure when you test. But it should happen all year round, right? Because our students are taking tests all year round. So by teaching our students some test-taking strategies, we can reduce their test anxiety and develop the skills that they really need to perform well on their tests. So here are some of my favorites. The first one we're going to talk about today is prioritizing questions. We're going to teach our students to scan the test and pick out the easiest questions to complete first. Now, this is a strategy that you're mainly going to want to use if they have a timed test or just a specific amount of time they have to complete the test in. They want to try to get the most bang for their buck, let's say, by completing those easy questions the fastest, and that's going to get them more confidence before they're tackling the more difficult questions. It's also going to free up some time for them to spend more time on those tricky questions if they do have that time limit. Now, when teaching how to prioritize, I would provide students with a checklist of things to look out for. And this really depends on what kind of tests that you're giving your students, what your personal state tests look like. So this is going to vary a little bit, but the things that I might put on it is looking for whether a question is easy or hard. And that, again, is going to be a personal thing. But as a teacher, we know some ways that we can look at a question and just say, oh, yeah, that's going to be hard, right? Especially if it's like a multiple step word problem or something like that. Your students can just look at it and be like, wow, that's a lot of text for the directions. And that might be a signal to them that that's a harder question. We know that completing multiple choice over short answer questions will often be easier for our students, especially our younger students. So maybe that's the first thing on our checklist, is that we're going to look for multiple choice and complete those first. The other thing you might want to have students look for is looking at questions that have words that they find difficult to read. If there are words in there that are challenging for them to sound out or even just understand, then that might be a little bit more of a difficult question for them. Again, this one is kind of personal to the student on what they feel is hard or not. So maybe this is something that you can brainstorm as a class, things that you want to put on this list. My next thing is skipping and returning. So this is very similar to prioritizing questions for difficulty, and skipping and returning is a great test-taking strategy to develop with your students. For skipping and returning, students are going to do just what it says. They're going to take the test in order, so they're just going to go question one, question two, and so on, but they're going to skip a question that's going to cause them to take a long time or it's confusing for them. You want to make sure you're teaching students to mark the test question in some way so they can return back to it at the end of the test. I personally like to teach students to circle the test number, and then when they're done with the test, they look for anything that was circled that they need to go back and either complete or take another look at. The third thing is going to be familiarize students with test formats, and this means different test formats. Now, state tests have very specific formats and directions for completing, so again, this is going to vary based on what kind of state you're in and what state testing that you have to complete. But throughout the school year, you want to try to incorporate similar parts of those directions or mirror the directions for testing. When it's time for the state test, students aren't going to be surprised that the test environment needs to have zero voice levels or that they're using a computer for the test. So you want to make sure that you're offering those parts that your students need to have within your classroom, ideally throughout the school year. Other ideas for using the test formats is to offer classroom tests in that same format. If your state test offers multiple choice, you're going to make sure that each test provides at least one question in a multiple choice format, if at all possible. I know sometimes the exact format of how we're giving a test might have to come from our curriculum and it's very mandated. But if you do have some wiggle room, maybe an exit ticket that has a multiple choice format, find some kind of way to build that in. If your testing is done through computers, you want to make sure students are working throughout the school year on typing programs. There's a lot of great ones that have free versions. I know my school district in particular allows students to access several different typing programs that they pay for. So that is something to look out for, because the more they know how to type, then they're not going to worry about finding the right letters on the keyboard, but instead they're just worrying about their answers. All right, my next test-taking strategy is to practice reading instructions. Reading comprehension, of course, is crucial during assessments. Crucial anytime, but especially during assessments. You want to teach students to carefully read and understand instructions before answering questions. Encourage them to underline key information and refer back to the instructions as needed. Just like we teach word problems, students should be familiar with keywords in test directions. Here's a few words students might come across in a test, and these are words you might want to maybe have like a little word wall or just make sure that you're incorporating them in your vocabulary. Analyze, comment, text, define, explain, illustrate, fact, purpose, identify, diagram. These are just a few words that I have come across that as I was brainstorming what I might find in a test that kids are often confused about, these might be some of them. So make sure that you are going throughout the school year identifying specific words that come up often in test questions, and make sure to clarify those with your students, because they might not always admit that they don't understand what that word means, especially if no one else in the class is admitting it. Because we all know we have those students. All right, next is finding text evidence. Now, teaching my students to find text evidence is a year-long process, especially when I taught second grade, but even more so now as well, because gifted students like to kind of breeze through everything, and they don't often pay attention to those small little things like directions or evidence. So with some students, this comes very easily to find the text evidence. Others really need daily practice. I like to teach students to underline their text evidence in passages with the number above it that corresponds to the question they are answering. So for an example, maybe we're on question 5, and on that test, question 5 is asking about a character's response to something. The student would then underline the sentence where the character maybe is upset over dropping their ice cream and put a number 5 above it. That way, when I know I'm going to check their test, I'm looking to see, did they underline? Oh, there's number 5. They circled the question about the boy smiling about their ice cream. So even though they underlined the text evidence, they didn't really read the text evidence, and that's going to give me where they're going wrong, right? So I can work on my student with that question. But that's just another example of why I like to have them number what they've underlined so that we can match it up later and make sure where they're getting their errors or where they're doing a good job. Another way to practice text evidence is through color coding. And I use Teaching in TAPAS. I hope I'm saying that right. TAPAS. I don't speak Spanish very well, so I know that is a Spanish thing. She uses reading passages. I know she has them for second grade. I've used third grade, fourth grade. They're amazing. And I do not get any compensation for this, so this is just a shameless plug. But I just love how my students always need to color the text to match the comprehension questions, and that her passages are standards-based and spiraled. Spiral review is always amazing anytime you can fit that in. And then knowing that they align to my standards means they align to my curriculum. So overall, I just love her passages. They make a great addition to my reading curriculum because that reading curriculum needs a little bit more robust questions and work with it, right? And I'm even using them right now for tutoring students first through fourth grade. Plus, it's easy to grade when you're looking for a very specific color highlighting the text. So did they color the right spot blue? Did they color the right spot orange? And she always uses the same colors. So in their toolkit, you only need to have some very specific colors. All right, next is process of elimination. And oh, by the way, I will link to that fabulous resource in my show notes. Next is process of elimination. Of course, this is a favorite among many teachers, and that is a great test-taking strategy that's perfect for multiple choice answers. Students will first rule out any answers that are ridiculous or just don't make any sense as the answer. For example, this last year when I was teaching second, we used a very specific group of tests purchased through Teachers Pay Teachers that talked about each reading standard had a test to go with it. And there was like a reading passage, and a lot of it had short answer or multiple choice questions. And a lot of times one of the multiple choice questions were like so far off base. Maybe the passage was about, I'm just going to make something up, a monkey. And one of the test question answers was about like a gorilla. Like you knew obviously that couldn't be the answer. So that was a great tool to teach them eliminating things that just don't make any sense. You didn't even read about a gorilla. Why is there a gorilla in the answers? So that's a great one to teach students, especially if your tests are giving silly answers like that. And then next, you're going to have students look for what is left over and decide if any of those words within the answer were not found in the question, such as gorilla, or they're just illogical, right? They just make no sense for what the question is asking for an answer. And then last, the students are going to consider extreme wording, and these would be words like always or never in an answer, because most of the time, always or never is not going to be a correct answer. Not all the time, but sometimes, most of the time, I guess. Statistically speaking. Now, students might want to put like a little small X in front of the options they are eliminating to keep track, but I would advise and teach students not to like write over the answer or put a line through the answer, because then they can't go back and read it and see if that's really the answer that they wanted to eliminate. So just a little heads up for that. Some students will darken it as much as they possibly can, and then you can't see the words anymore. Okay. Checking answers is my next test-taking strategy. And one of the ways students can learn to check their answers is, of course, to double-check their math calculations. They can verify all parts of a question were answered, and they can go back over their tests when they're done. If a question has more than one part, I would ask students to put a small check mark, over each part when it's complete. So if they see like two question marks, I want to see two check marks to make sure that each part of that question was answered. You also want to teach exactly what it means to go back over their test, because some students, believe it or not, might not know. Maybe every year their first and second grade teacher just kept saying, check your test when you're done, but they don't know exactly what to look for. So make sure to be explicit, just like with your classroom management. Go over exactly what it looks like when I am done with my test and I am checking it over. I'm going to go back over. Oh, did I put my name up here? No, I did not. Oh, it says date. Did I put the date? Oh, no, I did not. Does every single question have an answer? Let's see. There's 10 questions here. Oh, I have 9 answers. No, I missed one. Maybe you're talking about, oh, it's a word problem. Did I label my word problem in this math question? No, I did not. So maybe teach them there's different ways to check a math test versus a reading test. In a reading test, I'm underlining, I'm finding my text evidence, I'm writing my numbers that correspond with my text evidence questions. And then in my math test, I'm labeling things. I got my numbers right. My numbers aren't backwards because, you know, maybe my twos and my fives are going to get me a wrong grade if I mix them up. So I'm going through all those things. I'm being super explicit, because when you're teaching younger students, that is very important, because they might not know and they don't know to ask. So go over that. Okay, last but not least, of course, is rest and relaxation. When talking about tests, of course, we need to cover getting plenty of rest and relieving test anxiety. Now, unfortunately, sometimes rest is out of our students' control alongside getting a good breakfast in the morning. We know as adults that those are very beneficial, but sometimes the adults that are in charge of our classroom children might not feel like it's as important, or they just don't have the means, or I don't even know, but they just can't provide those things that our students need. Like, maybe we can advocate for our students to tell their parents, like, hey, I need some rest tonight because I have a really big test tomorrow. Can we set the alarm or make sure I'm in bed early? Because my teacher says it's important, or something like that. But what we can do and what's in our control is teaching our students how to relieve their anxiety while they're in the classroom and they're about to take a test. So we want to teach them how to take those big, deep breaths right before a test, and maybe even learn some positive self-talk that they can do internally, keyword, because you don't want them doing it out loud and annoying others during the test. But you want to teach them some positive self-talk, like, I can do this, I got this, I'm smart, I'm capable, things like that. And you might even consider creating a test-taking mantra as a class to say before each test, and that can be really empowering for your students. It also can be really fun and just a new way to foster that classroom community that we're all reaching to have, and just a fun way, like, okay, it's test time, let's say our mantra or say our chant or whatever you want to call it, and then everyone can just say, you know, like, I am smart, I am capable, I am amazing, I can do this, or whatever you want it to say. And then you start your test, you have a big deep breath, and then they're ready to go. They're not super anxious because that deep breathing calms them down, lowers their stress. So as always, at the end of an episode, I would love to know, what is your favorite test-taking strategy to teach your elementary students? If you have any that I've left out and I didn't cover, please make sure to go to Apple Podcasts, leave me a review, let me know, hey, episode 116 I loved, but I have this test-taking strategy. I was like a tongue twister right there. But I have this test-taking strategy that I would love for your audience to know about, and go ahead and leave it in the reviews. I would love to see them. And let's go ahead and just review those really quick. We talked about prioritizing questions, skipping and returning, familiarizing our students with test formats, practice reading instructions, finding text evidence, process of elimination, checking answers, and of course, rest and relaxation. You can find all of this information in the show notes by looking wherever you are reading this podcast description from, and any details like the Teaching in Tapas product, I will have in my show notes as well. Again, I do not get any compensation for that at all. I just happen to love that TPT author and I like that product. So thank you so much for listening. Have a wonderful rest of your week. Bye for now. If you've loved this show, then join me in sharing the teaching,
hitting that subscribe button,
and leaving us a review on
iTunes,
so we can be found by more teachers like you who are ready to start sharing the workload. I hope you've enjoyed this episode. Find new episodes each week on ShareTeaching.com.
Thanks for listening to the Share Teaching Podcast.
Test directions. Here are a few words the students might want to come across or might. Other ideas for using the same test formats is to offer classroom. So this is very similar to